Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VRO. Tonight we have another special guest. We have Richard Gunn from The Love of Money, and Jess is actually in a screening room with him right now. We kind of switched it up because when I'm in a screening room and we are getting ready to go live, it will pop me on air. So I just threw Jess inside the screening room, which Jess is actually taking herself out of the screening room right now, and then I will give her the show. Hey, Jess.
Hi, Amy. We're going to start from the beginning here.
Yeah, because that was a little difficult for me. So I'm going to mute myself, and you two have fun.
Okay, we will. Right. Hello, and welcome to the VRO. Today is Monday, June 4th, 2012. It is 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. I'm Jess, and I'll be hosting for tonight. As Miss Amy runs the switchboard in the background, we continue our interview sessions with the cast and crew of For the Love of Money, which premieres tomorrow night in L.A. Last week, we were lucky enough to interview director Ellie Kanner Zuckerman and actor Eddie Furlong. Earlier this evening, we had the pleasure of interviewing Joshua Bitton, who plays the character of Yoni. And now we have an opportunity to speak with our next guest, who is most well-known for his role as Calvin Sketchy Theodore on the series Dark Angel. In For the Love of Money, our next guest plays the character of Vince, a backstabbing seedy gangsta. The VRO is very happy to welcome Richard Gunn. Hello, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay. So tell us about... So tell us about your character, obviously, other than backstabbing and cheating, tell us about your character in For the Love of Money. He's not a good guy.
No, he's not a good guy, and I usually don't get the opportunity to play guys like him, so I was really thrilled about that. He's like the right-hand man of a really bad dude in Los Angeles in the late 70s, early 80s. The guy he works for is named Mickey Levine, and he's an Israeli gangster, but operating out of Los Angeles. And then I won't tell you why, but I switch bosses later in the film and start working for their guy who arrives on the scene towards the middle of the movie.
Levi, yes. Now, Amy and I were lucky enough to get a screening copy of For the Love of Money, so we won't give away
much
information, but we did get to see it, and we both loved it. I have to say that your character, your portrayal of Vince was very realistic. Like, I was like, okay, I don't like this guy. And I knew I wasn't supposed to like him. You know, it was...
Uh-huh.
You did it well. Because
I knew
from the beginning, like, I don't trust this guy. There's something not... He's sneaky. And he is.
He's
for both
underhanded.
People.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very underhanded. He played dumb very well too. Like, he would do this stuff, and when he got caught, he would pretend like he didn't know anything.
Oh yeah, yeah, of course. I would equate this with anybody trying to climb up the ranks and become the head guy, which is essentially what Vince wanted to do. And the only thing about Vince, though, is probably once he became that guy, he really wouldn't know how to do it. You know what I mean? Like, so he has the aspiration to get there, but then to actually get there, I don't know if he would be able to. I think he functions much better as the right hand man.
Right. Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that you don't often get a chance to play the bad guy. Was that one of the things that drew you to the role of Vince?
Yeah, it was, for sure. And also that I think you can tell, after seeing the movie, or when you, while you're watching, you kind of get the idea that Vince maybe isn't 100%. You know, he doesn't have the full six pack. He's missing a couple marbles, and so that's something that I find really exciting role, because it really opens the role up to anything that it really is freeing. I can really create something unique in that set of circumstances, I think. So that's what really was attractive about that part to me, and actually did come up with a lot of things that really weren't in the script to begin with, like if you kind of get the idea that Vince was maybe had a rock and roll background.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's one scene in particular that kind of cracks me up, where and I won't go into too much detail, but you guys are on your way to basically do this heist, and you're in the car, and all of a sudden, Ben starts singing, and it's just such a serious, like, a lot of anticipation and anxiety, and this dude is just rocking out in the car, oblivious to everything else, and it's just such a ridiculous thing that I just started chuckling, and I was like, okay, this guy, like you said, maybe a couple beers short of a six-pack.
Right, exactly, yeah, and because he looks at it like he's going to work, you know, like anybody else. It's not a big whip to do a heist or, you know, commit some sort of violent act every night, you know. You know what I mean? So I think I'm glad that came across too. Well, I think that's what makes that the humor play well in that scene, because it is it does seem a bit odd, but I think in Vince's mind, it's everything is just as it should be.
Yeah, it was just really funny, and I liked your perspective that it was just like him going to work. Like, what would you do if you were on your way to work? Of course, you'd just sing to yourself, and like nothing was going on, just another day at the office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very amusing to me. Also, kudos on the handlebar mustache, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That kind of came about accidentally. You know, it's funny. I never had a mustache like that, and I've been lazy and I hadn't been shaving, so I had this beard grown out, and then I was like, hey, I wonder what that would look like if I shaved off that handlebar mustache. And my girlfriend was losing it; she was flipped out about it. But she said she was so repulsed. But somehow attracted to it at the same time. And so I knew that I had something special there.
Yes, it definitely added to the character, I have to say. It definitely also put me back into the late 70s, 80s
kind
of period.
Oh, awesome.
So it was very Magnum P.I.
Yeah, really.
Which I think also added to the character, too, because I could absolutely see him being, like, the type of guy who wanted to, like, look like the cool guy on TV, but yet I could definitely see that happening. When you were preparing for the role of Vince, was there anything that you anticipated or thought would be an obstacle or a challenge for the role, or did you have it down? Did you know exactly how you were going to do it? Or did you foresee any obstacles, or were there any surprises while you were filming that you didn't know were going to be an obstacle?
Well, I was, I think that he was described as, you know, sleazy in the script. And I was like, I was, the obstacle there is I wanted to embody that, but not have it be a caricature, you know? So that presented a challenge to me, because I really never had the opportunity to do a part with that in the description before. So I was a little bit, I was wondering how that would come across. But I think that there was enough in there so that he felt sleazy and dangerous, but somehow people still kind of liked him, but in spite of themselves.
Yeah. I didn't trust him, but
I
kind of liked him, but I didn't trust him.
Yeah, but you didn't want to like him, right?
Right, yeah.
You really didn't want to. But so yeah. I'm really thrilled that's the response to it, because that's what I was going for. I think that was really the main. Also, you know, I was going to have to have a dangerous quality about the guy, which, I mean, you can't really help but have if he's, you know, I'm in there doing, you know, shooting people and smashing people in the face and stuff, which so that I'm sure it really helped it. But I wish I could, you know, meet you in person right now, because I'm really not, I don't come across that way. I was concerned about that as well, that he would seem like, you know, a guy that you don't want to mess with. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, it's funny too, the character that you play, he's consistent. Like, he's consistently backstabbing, but inadvertently is really the catalyst for, unfortunately, what happens to poor Yoni later on in the movie. And this poor guy, this poor innocent guy, winds up getting the shit kicked out of him. I can say that, because we're on internet radio. But
oh, great.
But
I wasn't sure for a second.
Yeah, no, we can say whatever we want, but
okay.
He really gets the snot beat out of him, and, you know, has the potential to get killed. I won't say what happens to him, but it really all stems from the character of Vince, because if Vince hadn't backstabbed Mickey, and also hadn't backstabbed Levi, this wouldn't have happened, this whole... looking for the money that Levi stole, and poor Yoni getting caught up in the middle of it, because really Yoni had nothing to do with it. And it's just amazing when you look back at it, that one character's actions put into play all of that.
If you were to ask Vince what he thought of that, then he might say his point of view wouldn't agree with that. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
He would say that it really he had no choice in what he did.
Right. Well, because he had to do what he needed to do to get ahead.
Sure.
So
it's all justifications,
justified.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I think that's
great.
Oh, good.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's where people come across as bad or good is a judgment call that other people make on them without knowing their justifications. Because there are bad, you know, what would you say, empirically bad actions, but... someone who is doing something that others would look at and say is bad would have their own justifications for it, and usually would not necessarily think it was as bad as maybe an objective party.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. It's all a matter of perspective.
Right, that's such a great way of summing it up.
Right, yeah.
It's all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, it's all a matter of, it's all relative. But, I agree with you on that, because without knowing justifications, you can, it's almost like reading something that's written down as opposed to having a conversation with somebody, like having an IM message as opposed to actually being in front of them and having a conversation where you can read this specific way, but you can't tell the person's emotions or justifications or motivation or even tone of voice when you're reading an IM or an email as opposed to seeing them in person and then getting their perspective from it.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're totally right, that analogy.
So now you've worked on a lot of TV. You've done some film and you've done some theater. What is it that you like doing the most?
Oh, I have to say I really like doing films, but the thing that I don't like about film is it ends abruptly, whereas television, you know, really have the, I mean, if you're a regular on a TV series, you really have the opportunity to create a character in an ongoing environment, hopefully, that, you know, will last for years, and you can keep, and you can actually have, you know, interaction with the writers, and work with each other and make something really a lot, something organic comes from that process, I think, in a good circumstance. And so that I'd have to say that's, if I had to pick one, I'd say I really like playing a series regular on a TV show because of that.
Right, having that that sort of camaraderie and just being able to meet with the same set of people every week.
Yeah, and it continues, you know, like it's not just, oh, I play this guy for a little, because I always become attached to the characters I'm playing, and then it's abruptly gone, and I'm like, oh man, I get depressed for like a week. So I really enjoyed when I was on a series doing that, because it continued on and because it became something bigger than everybody involved, because there's so many people contributing to it. Do you know what I mean? Like a film, it's all written in advance. And yes, there a lot of times people are open to ideas and collaboration during the process, but it doesn't evolve like a television show has the possibility to.
Yeah, I see where you're coming with that. How did you get involved in acting?
Oh well, I was very shy when I'm very, like, naturally an introverted sort of person, and so I was very shy when I was a teenager, and I was speaking with my guidance counselor in high school, and I said, you know, I really want to take a class that kind of helps me to work out, be a little more outgoing, or, you know, not so shy. And he said, well, you could take speech or you could take theater class, drama class is what they call it. And I said, oh, wow, speech doesn't sound very fun, so I'll take drama. And and so I did, and I really took to it. It was kind of really surprising to me. I never thought I would. I was a very good student, and I always had a knack for math and science and things more on a intellectual level. And acting is kind of it's not so intellectual. It's very much more physical, I don't know, creative. And it was, you know, actually it was something I felt like I wasn't very good at too, but it was challenging to me, and that's one of the things that attracted me to it. And I'll tell you what, I was a little kid, my mom and my grandmother took me to audition for that movie Mr. Mom, if you remember that movie.
Yes.
And I was horrified, and I didn't want nothing to do with it, And I remember it still in my mind, has scarred me. I was standing in the hallway, and the people came down, and they were asking each kid their name. You know, and the kid next to me was very outgoing, very like, "Hey, I'm Bobby." And then they asked me my name, and I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'm Richie." And I was very, you know, closed off and shy, and they're like, "Okay," and they kind of pushed me aside and went to the next one. So I'm surprised. That's another reason why I'm surprised that I ever got into this line of work.
Now, after high school, you actually were with a professional repertory company in Shakespeare Santa Cruz.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Now, do you have a favorite Shakespearean play?
I think my favorite has to be The Merry Wives of Windsor. But I think that's because of the production I saw at Shakespeare Santa Cruz. And they're very out of the box in their thinking on the environments and settings and sort of eras in which they bring to life these Shakespeare plays. And so they set The Merry Wives of Windsor in a 70s trailer park, and it was amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it was so great.
Yeah.
It was very
funny. I did a production of Macbeth. I know you're not supposed to say that, but we've done Macbeth. But they did it in 1970s Sex Pistol, and they made the warring nations were actually drug dealers. It was a gang war, and
nice, wow.
Yeah, they had, like, you know, totally Sex Pistols, punk rock costumes, and Lady Macbeth was trying to pop her vein out to get the spot out, and you know,
really?
Heroin, and oh yeah, it was great.
Wow.
So I can totally get your appreciation for The Merry Wives of Windsor in the trailer park.
Yeah, what an interesting take on Macbeth. I've never seen a take on it like that. Actually, I haven't seen Macbeth done in a way that's not, you know, more traditional.
Yeah, I love taking things, and like, I love the Romeo and Juliet, the production of Romeo and Juliet that Paul Sorvino was in. I was telling Amy earlier today that that's got to be one of my favorite movies from high school. I used to wear the tape out, the VHS tape out, watching that movie. To this day, I think I still have the soundtrack. You know, it was just one of those things where it was like, yeah, I get Shakespeare, and it's great when I see it in a way that is non-traditional.
Yeah,
so it's awesome.
Are you a big fan of classical theater, or Shakespeare in particular?
Yes, I am. I have to say, I think Hamlet is my favorite, and second to that would be Twelfth Night.
Twelfth Night, yeah. I did Twelfth Night with Shakespeare Santa Cruz, too.
Nice.
But that had more of a. I think they set that in the 30s.
Ooh, interesting.
It was 30s type of era, but it wasn't. It wasn't elaborately set in the 30s.
Just stylized.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's more like stylized in the costumes and that sort of thing.
Okay. Very cool. Well, now that we've had our little geek out, and I'm sure that
we had a theater geek session.
Our little personal conversation here. Sorry, guys.
Uh-huh.
tell us a little bit about what you're working on now. I'm looking at IMDb, and they're telling me that it's rumored, and maybe you can confirm or deny, that you're playing the character of Robert in a movie called Treachery.
That's correct. Yeah, I will confirm it.
Okay. What is
about? Treachery is a coming of age story about a guy in his 20s, or, well, I guess he's about 19 or 20, and he essentially has to. He's a wealthy kid, or his dad is wealthy, and he has to kind of make the decision between going with what he thinks is idealistically correct life to lead, or going with the life that is offered to him, where money is the important thing to achieve. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So he's like, I got to do what my dad says, or I got to go beyond my own and live the life that I think is right and make money myself, make my own way.
Now that's in pre-production, or you haven't started filming yet?
They started filming today.
Oh.
I haven't started yet. I start on Thursday, but the film actually started going today.
Okay. Well, great.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it is great. Okay. It's a very exciting project. I get to work with some really cool people that I haven't had the chance to work with before. Michael Biehn, who everybody knows from The Terminator,
mm-hmm.
is in the film, and he's an awesome actor. I really admire him. And also, Jennifer Blanc is in the movie, too, and she was in Dark Angel with me all those years ago. So we have a little bit of a Dark Angel alumni reunion.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. And all the actors in the cast are really exceptionally talented people. And this is a lot more like, it has an independent vibe to it, the film independent feature vibe to it, and it's it's a drama. It's not like a thriller, you know, or any, it's simply a drama. It's a really good one.
Right. Well, we definitely love to have you back once the movie is ready to premiere. We'd love to have you back and maybe some other people.
Yeah, I'd love to come on and chat with you again.
Yeah, get it out there. And Amy's asking me in the background if you have a Twitter account that you use for fans who want to get in contact with you. And if you do have Twitter, what do you think about Twitter?
I do have a Twitter account. I'll tell you it in just a second. I don't know it off. So I will tell you what I think about Twitter is that I think it's a great way to market yourself and to get people updated on what you're up to at the moment.
The networking on Twitter is insane, I have to say. I have to agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's the word I was looking for, networking. And mine is, oh boy, Twitter, yeah, here we go. It's Richard Gunn Inc. I think it's Richard Gunn Inc.
Yes. Okay. Yes, Amy, you're correct. She just Twittered me. She just emailed me, and she's like, "Can you ask him if this is him?"
Oh, great. Yeah, you guys know quicker than I do.
Yes.
So my thing about Twitter though is that I like it for the reason that it's so great for networking, but it's difficult for me to remember to want to include to include. Everybody in my day-to-day life because I'm so absorbed in it, and so I end up not tweeting very often.
I have the same problem. I get involved.
Yeah, I don't know. And I see these people that tweet all the time. They're like, "Hey, I'm at the market," or "Hey, I'm I'm going to the gym now," and they say something witty about it. I'm like, "Wow, it doesn't cross my mind. I don't know. I mean, they just have a knack for it."
Yeah, there are times where I look at some people's tweets and I'm like, "Wow, I wish I was that cool." No,
I know. Have you seen? You know, I was looking up like who has the most followers on Twitter, and I think it's, I don't know if it is still, but at the time it was Stephen Fry. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a British personality, I guess you call him.
I think
he was part of Monty Python. Anyway, he has the most followers, and it's millions of people who are following his tweets, and he comes up with some of the greatest stuff.
I think that's too much pressure for me. I can't be that pretty under pressure.
I know. He just has a knack for it.
That's too funny. I can't imagine following that many people. I mean, or having them follow me, and it's just.
That's a little intimidating, I think.
Yeah, and then you have to be careful what you say on Twitter, because you know it'll always come back and bite you in the ass.
Right. Yeah. And it's all recorded for all time.
You know, they were saying that the Library of Congress is going to save all of the Twitters for posterity or for some sort of anthropological research in the future or something like that, which scared the crap out of me. I'm like, oh my gosh, whatever I say on Twitter will be seen for, you know.
I don't envy that anthropologist.
No.
That'd be a really daunting task.
Yes. And Amy says she's looking forward to the at the gym tweets now. So she's looking forward to seeing your post about going to the gym.
I'm gonna have to step up now a little bit.
Yeah. So she says she started following. In any case, we loved having you on, Richard, and the character Vince is an amazing character. You played him very well, and very good with the sleazy gangster, kind of creepy.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. But I have to say, in person, definitely not the sleazy guy. So I'm glad about that.
Well, we still haven't met.
That's true.
I could be leering, you know. You never know.
That's true. You could be leering. We can leer at each other on Twitter. But yeah, definitely would love to have you back on to talk about Treachery when it comes back out. And
And
are you going to the premiere tomorrow night?
Of course. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. It's very exciting.
Good.
I think we're going to have a great turnout.
I think you are too, and it doesn't hurt that we've been pumping the movie for the last week. So hopefully, people who can get there, and it will be it premieres tomorrow in LA, and then it releases in select theaters across the nation, and then according to Ellie, I was talking to Josh earlier today. According to Ellie, they're going to try and get it on, like, every electrical device possibility in September. So it'll be, like,
video on demand, iTunes,
and all that stuff. So if anybody is listening, if you have not had plans to go see the movie, if you're in L.A. tomorrow, see if it's around you, take a look. You want to see it on the big screen, and if not, it'll be available in September.
Yep.
Yeah. Please make it out if you get a chance. I think people will enjoy it.
I think they will too. And before we let you go, we have a quick favor to ask you. We ask all of our guests to leave us with a little soundbite and just say your name. You're listening to the VRO, and you can add whatever you want to it.
Okay. Hi, I'm Richard Gunn, and I'm listening to the VRO. I love these girls.
I think that's like the best clip we've ever got.
Yeah, I think we'll save that one. Thank you, Richard, so much.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Talk to you.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Two amazing interviews tonight.
Yeah, kicked it.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes. So we've got two new Twitters for you guys to give love to. We have at Joshua Bitton, and that's JOSHUABITON. And then we have at Richard Gunn, Inc., and that is RichardGunninc. So go give them love. Tell them you heard the interview on the VRO and you loved hearing them and want to hear more from them. And,
yes.
I'm psyched. I'm, like, all pumped up now because I had two great interviews.
I know. These two men are amazing.
They were really fun, I have to say, both of them. Did you like our geek talk? Did we bore you?
No, honey, me? Really? I'm like hating that I'm not in New York, because here in North Carolina, the plays that we get to go to are the ones that Avon puts together in his kindergarten class.
Well, we'll have to go. If you ever come to Boston and they're playing any Shakespeare or anything, it's not Broadway, but it's just as good. But we'll definitely have to take a trip and go see some professional theater. But
we're just going to have to jump on the train and go down. I hate that we couldn't make it to the Newsies.
Oh, I am so upset about that. I really wanted, maybe like a 1-4 that we can get together and go on tour.
Oh, if they go on tour, we're definitely doing that.
I'm really surprised that they didn't extend it, because it did so well. So maybe they'll do it again.
Or even if they just, like, give us a DVD.
Yeah.
You know, I
like
would watch it on my TV.
DVD?
Yeah, like a live performance DVD.
That'd be great.
We need to start a Twitter campaign on that.
I absolutely loved Richard's conversation with me about Shakespeare. I mean, I think that's the first time I talked about Shakespeare on air, and I actually knew everything everybody was talking about.
I know.
So I was like, yeah, I have to see if I can find a copy of that performance from Shakespeare Santa Cruz and find out really how they did that with the trailer park, because that sounds really cool. But I'm glad you guys liked it. Glad you were entertained, and hopefully you guys will get a chance to go out to see the movie. We're going to continue interviewing cast and crew for the movie For the Love of Money. It's hard for me to say for the Love of Money, but the movie For the Love of Money. We have Jonathan Lipnicki tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern,
yes.
And he plays Yoni earlier, younger Yoni, which was the character Josh Gitton, who we interviewed earlier today. And he played the character of Yoni later on in life. And Jonathan Lipnicki, who played the kid in Jerry Maguire, he's all grown up. And let me tell you, he's got some six-pack. So he plays the character of Yoni younger, and yes, he does take his shirt off in the film. So you may want to go see it just for that fact. and we were supposed to have Jenna Mattinson tomorrow also, but we have moved her to Wednesday. She requested a reschedule. So it will be Wednesday at what time, Amy?
9:00.
9 p.m. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And do we have anything for Friday?
Friday we do. We have nothing for the Love of Money, but we have a couple of interviews that we are going to do. Actually, Wednesday, I know I'm totally going to screw up his last name. Sid Hogg? Is that it? It's H-A-I-G. If you are horror buff. Yes, thank you.
Sid Hogg.
Yes, thank you. Sid Haig. If you are a horror buff, you know him from House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Reject. He played the cynic clown. Our new horror show is doing an amazing job, and they are going to, you know, have plenty more great interviews, but this is their debut show, and they have this guy. Who I am nervous because he scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, he scares me too, and I know exactly who you're talking about. He's been in, like, every horror movie that scared the crap out of me so far. Because I think he was also in The Hills Have Eyes, but I'm not sure. He might have been in that also.
Yeah,
but,
well, he scares me, and I am... I don't know how I'm going to be on the switchboard screening his call. Hopefully, Michael told him to call in early. So hopefully he calls in early so I'm not alone and I have Jamie and Michael there.
Well, I have to say, I have heard interviews with him before. He's a really cool guy. So he's not like he is on the movies. So it would be too scary.
Oh, yeah, we are going to talk. Jamie and Michael are going to talk about everything. They're not just going to talk about horror movies. They are going to talk about everything with him. And he agreed to do the entire hour.
Awesome.
And take callers. So this is going to be an amazing interview, and I actually might have to recruit somebody to screen the calls, because the way Jamie has to call in, he has to call in through my Skype, so I won't be able to screen the calls.
Okay.
So I might have to recruit you for 6 p.m. if you're free.
She's killing me. She's killing me. I am doing back-to-back interviews.
Just think, next month, Jess, you don't have to do anything.
No, I do. I still have to do True Blood.
Okay, yeah, you have to do True Blood, and maybe that's it, because I have the first week, we're going to kind of take a couple of days off for the 4th of July, and then the following week after that, I'll be gone from the 10th through the 18th. So we're not going to book anything for that, because we got Comic-Con. And then after that, you know, I'm going to be tired and I'm going to be booking. I'm going to be booking things, and I'm going to be like, Jess, you got to do this. She's over there. Amy's lying through her teeth. Oh, sorry.
She's going to, load me up. Going to load me up with stuff.
It's no, I promise. I will give you, 2 weeks off.
Okay. Well, that's okay. I might as well get the stuff in now, because in August and September, it's not happening.
Exactly. See? So I need to pack all this stuff in.
True. Well, speaking of, let me go get some beauty rest so I can get ready for my interview tomorrow with Jonathan Lipnicki. And I will talk to you soon. I hope everybody enjoyed this, and definitely check out For the Love of Money.
Yes, and remember, I will not be around. I am actually going to tomorrow, Avon Grash.
That's great.
My nephew is going to be a kindergartner.
Oh, well, give him a big hug and congratulate the graduate tomorrow for me. I can't believe he's 5. I remember when he was 1.
I know, 5 years old, and he actually joins us on the round table for The Walking Dead.
That's awesome.
He's 5 years old, and he's like, oh, I love The Walking Dead. I love The Vampire Diaries. And I'm like, no, you don't. You need to be watching, Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2.
You know, it's funny, because I first met Dave, and he couldn't even say my name, and now he's, saying full sentences. It's just bizarre.
I know. He's telling, I was talking to Gino, and he told Gino, he was like, my Aunt Amy rules. I'm like, oh my God, this kid has grown up.
That's
but he's
great.
Still my baby. He's still my little boy.
Yeah.
If Ori would sign the papers over, I would take him.
Aw.
I'd be his mummy aunt.
His mummy aunt? Aunt mummy?
Yeah, mommy, there you go. But awesome interview, Jess. Guys, both of them, Richard and Joshua, are new to Twitter. So let's help them get some followers and stuff. And so definitely do that. And the rude blog talk lady just popped into my ear and said, we have 90 seconds.
I kind of heard that.
Did you hear? She's very rude.
She is rude. But 90 seconds.
Yeah, I know. Even Josh, when we were doing the interview before the pre-interview, we were in screening and talking before we went on air and stuff like that. And he was like, she's rude. And I was like, yeah, she is. She interrupts us.
Yes, she does. All right,
so guys,
really
definitely
have to go.
Check
My
out.
Dying.
Yes, check out tomorrow's interview. Check out Wednesday's interview. Check us out on Twitter at thevro.com. That's not our Twitter name. That's our website, vro.com. Twitter name is thevro. And good night.
Good night.
Do you love movies, music, books, television? You do? Then come on over to the VRO on Blog Talk Radio. We have shows for all your obsessions. Vampires, we've got them. The latest blockbuster movies, they're right here. Bands and books, music and fiction, it's all at the VRO. What are you waiting for? Log on to the VRO today. www.thevro.com.